All right, well, we've reached the point that we've been waiting on, the last class before lunch. It is lesson four in our study today. The title of this lesson is Noah Thanks God. Our text, Genesis 8, verse 20 through 9, verse 17. So let's start by reading that text together. The setting, you know, this is what we've been building to. They've been on the ark for a good long time. Now they're coming off the ark in that previous couple verses. But would somebody read the entire text starting in 8:20 through 9:17?
So God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be on every beast of the earth, on every bird of the air, on all that move on the earth, and on all the fish of the sea. They are given in your hand. Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. I have given you all things, even as the green herbs. But you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood. Surely, for your lifeblood, I will demand a reckoning. From the hand of every beast I will require it, and from the hand of man, from the hand of every man's brother, I will require the life of man. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For in the image of God he made man. And as for you, be fruitful and multiply. Bring forth abundantly in the earth and multiply in it." Then God spoke to Noah and said to his sons with him, saying, "And as for me, behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, and every beast of the earth with you. Of all that go out of the ark, every beast on the earth, thus I establish my covenant with you. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood. Never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." And God said, "This is the sign of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be for the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. It shall be, when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the rainbow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. The water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. The rainbow shall be in the cloud, and I will look on it to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth." And God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth."
Thank you, Patrick. So let's look at our lives. What do we have to be thankful for? Tell me what we have to be thankful for. Floyd?
The air we breathe.
The air we breathe. Life itself.
Health.
Salvation. What else?
Family.
Friends. Everything of this enjoyable life and the hope of the life to come. Are we commanded by God to be thankful? Yes. Why are we commanded by God to be thankful?
Because we're not being born again.
Okay. So that perspective, without God, nothing else is meaningful. Right. How about, are we thankful for the country we live in? We should be. The opportunities that it affords. Even as a country, you know, we can talk about some of the negatives, but as a country, are we a thankful people?
We should be.
We're not always. Is there one day a year where at least our country says Thanksgiving? Okay, what's the history? What's the origins of Thanksgiving? Back to the 16th century, the Pilgrims, they came over, an oppressed people. You know, they had this journey into a new land. When they made it, they were able to have a meal together and be thankful. So Noah, he gets off the ark. They're starting to remultiply the earth. What's the first thing that he does? He builds an altar. Okay. So we have Noah. He's been through a lot. Now he's going to do something. Has there been an altar built before? Is there another record? Okay, so Abel, we think back to Abel, but I don't think an altar is mentioned. It talks about, you know, Abel's more perfect sacrifice, but I think this might be the first record of an altar, but that might be some of your homework. Check me on that. So why is the story of Noah building an altar, being thankful, why is that important to us? How does it relate to how we express our thanks? He's come through this, you know, very difficult time. He knows he's not lucky, but he's of the fortunate few to have made it. And what's the first thing he does? He builds this altar to thank God. Right.
We forget, you know, it's easy to go and remember God when we really need Him, like we're in trouble or something. But even just like in normal life, sometimes it's hard, or not hard, but we just don't say thank you enough. And it can be like, definitely be like that spiritually.
Watch out for people that give ourselves credit for everything.
Okay.
We're the main generation.
Right. So Noah did a lot of things right to get to this point in his life and his family's life. But right, you got to be able to give back, the thanks where it's due. And I guess I'm caught up on all the first. So if this is the first altar, Noah doesn't have necessarily a pattern of this is what Lamech did, this is what Methuselah did, this is what the folks before me did. But what else was the first? Had there been a rainstorm before this time? No. So, God kind of changed the whole, water cycle, with the flood. Before, it was just almost a constant mist that was able to replenish the earth. So what else is there not if there's no rain? Today we have meteorologists. That, okay, we've got this system coming across the plains, and in a couple days it's going to be here. Put yourself in Noah's shoes of, okay, now Noah's the first meteorologist, right? Hey, there's going to be this, molecules of water falling out of the sky, and all of this destruction is going to happen. He has to give a science lesson of, what's going to happen, to these people. So another first. Now he's, gone through the flood. He's been on the ark. He's seeing the opportunities that the animals and also his family have to start, human race and all the animals over. So he spent his first, 500 years not combating all the naysayers, but now he doesn't have a lot of the negativity that he had. He gets to raise the next generation And he's a pretty big influence. You know, it's almost like you and your family, you're able to teach your family, you know, without all the negatives that you can't necessarily control. You know, as the years go by, you know, some of that sin, you know, does start to creep in. But, you know, God definitely hit the reset, you know, button pretty hard, I guess, is what my point is there. So, you know, Noah has a lot to be thankful for. 8:20, he builds an altar. He sacrifices of every clean animal. So what's this sacrifice for? I kind of, you know, thought about two different things. It's to praise God, but it is also for atoning sins. You know, Moses did a lot of things right, but he was still a man, you know, an imperfect being that had sinned. Tell me about sacrifices in the Old Testament that were meant for atonement. Why did man have to sacrifice animals? What was special about that? Okay, so the animals had blood. Okay, good point. You know, it's the blood of the animals that is specific. And why is blood important? What's in the blood? The life source in the blood. And what did the blood do? Did it forgive sins? No. And so it rolled everybody's sin forward a year. Or, you know, some period of time. And then what did you have to do at that point? Roll them again. So another sacrifice. So we had to, you know, continue to roll the sin forward until what time? When Jesus, the, you know, perfect sacrifice, the perfect Passover lamb, once and for all, you know, backwards and forwards, was our sacrifice for sin. So Noah wasn't the only one in the Old Testament to sacrifice, you know, for his family. Can you think of others that did that? Job. Okay, who did Job sacrifice for?
His children.
How many children did Job have that we have record of? Okay, seven sons and three daughters. And it says, flip over to Job chapter 1. Job chapter 1, verse 5. And what's that number?
775.
And that's the number of sacrifices?
The children.
Oh, okay, the children. So I was gonna, I was going along with what Harry said. Let's read Job 1:5. And it was when the days of their feasting were gone about that Job sent and sacrificed for them and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. So the number of sacrifices for the number of them all. And Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus Job did continually. So he's sacrificing, you know, for himself, but also for his family. All right, back to our text, 8:21. Genesis 8, verse 21. And the Lord smelled a sweet savor. And the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake. For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more everything living as I have done. So tell me about that first part of the verse. And the Lord smelled a sweet savor. What does that mean? Maybe you have a different version. What does your different version say? Soothing aroma. Okay, that's pretty similar.
God was pleased.
I think it's the ESV or the ASV that that says God was pleased. So God was pleased. Never again curse. you know, soothing aroma. I mean, to me, that's a personification of what's going on. But God is pleased is the more, you know, direct. This is what's happening because of it. The Hebrew word there, N-I-K-I-H-O-A-K-H, that's the word there for, you know, the sweet aroma, the pleasing. It's very similar to how you spell Noah's name in the Hebrew. Noah, N-O-A-K-H. And the author here says that's likely intentional. Genesis 5:29, I think we touched on this earlier, but this is where Lamech names Noah. And what does he say there? Read 5:29 for me. Okay, this one will comfort us. That's not too different from, you know, what a sweet aroma does. It's it, you know, can certainly be pleasing to us. You know, that might be another layer of connectivity here. All right, continuing in 8:21. I will not again curse the ground anymore for man's sake. For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. What does that remind you of another verse? Maybe one that we've read today? Okay, correct. So back in chapter 6, verse 5, read that for me. Every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. So, I mean, to me, that's a pretty strong mimic. You know, the nature or the route that man takes wasn't corrected forever. And God, you know, God realizes that. But because of this, you know, this sacrifice of Noah, in the first part of the verse, you know, the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground anymore. I think, you know, that tells us what sacrifice, you know, what pure, what good, appropriate, biblical sacrifice, you know, can do even for us. All right, the last part there in 8:21. Talks about, you know, never again, total destruction by global flood. It's not necessarily revoking the curse of the ground, but it's God's, you know, commitment that he'll never destroy the entire, you know, his entire creation by flood waters. All right, tell me what the sign of this covenant is. It might be over my left shoulder. The rainbow. Why is a rainbow significant? Okay, it happens when it rains. So when it's raining, right.
It's like post-traumatic stress.
That's right. I mean, it would be the soothing, you know, the fidget, you know, tool that we have. Okay, there's that rainbow. Oh yeah, you know, God's covenant. We're not gonna, you know, be totally destroyed by flooding again. So each time we see it, it has the opportunity to remind us. So it has the opportunity to remind us if we think back to these verses, but does sometimes man exploit or, you know, go against, you know, what God wants for his creation or for his signs? I think the, you know, the rainbow is a good example of that, Just because, you know, every rainbow you see now, you know, the non-natural kind, you know, they can certainly, others can try to take a different meaning. And, you know, to me, that gives just a small fraction of certainly the sadness, but, you know, almost, I mean, sometimes the wrath that God might have had of, okay, how can you take something so pure, you know, so important to God's relationship with this man and the generations to follow, which, you know, we're included in, and turn it to something that, you know, doesn't align with everything else that God has promised. So I can, you know, I can see God's side when, you know, man makes him mad. You know, there's wrath because of that.
Something interesting too about it is chapter 9, he talks about the rainbow, and you kind of alluded to this, but it's not God's promise to man, it's God's promise to the rest of his creation.
Right.
Because most of God's promises are to us.
Right.
But what's unique about the rainbow and this particular promise, it's not to us, because he mentions, man's going to continue to sin, but I'm not going to punish the rest of creation because of what man's done. He's already had to do it twice.
Right.
He did it with Adam and Eve, and now he's done it with the time of Noah, the man of that day. And so this promise is another great tragedy of what people have done and exploited the rainbow, is that it wasn't even meant necessarily for man as much as it was meant for creation.
It's a very physical thing that animals that have the ability to see colors, you know, can see. I can only imagine if the animals, you know, from the animals' perspective of, okay, man has messed up this perfect creation that God has given us, and now we're going to have to go on this ark, you know, for some indefinite period, and suffer, you know, because of man. A lot of these animals don't want to be in a confined space, as, you know, just like the humans had to be.
And even before that, with Adam and Eve, when man was in the garden and sin had ended the world, if you think about it from the perspective of animals, I don't know if they have a conscience like
right.
People, but people weren't killing animals. Animals weren't dying. And then after that, men had to begin to sacrifice. So animals were dying that way. They were used for clothing for man. And so through our sin and creation, really has suffered.
All right, so let's talk. I've got three lessons that we can learn from this group of verses. First one, you know, we've hit it hard. Be thankful. You know, being able to see God during the storms, seeing that he is never gonna leave us, is important. Flip over to Romans chapter 8. Romans 8 and 28. First one there gets to read that one. Romans chapter 8, verse 28. Okay, so all things work together for good. So it's easy to connect the dots and see how the positive things can work together. But sometimes, you know, those trials and tribulations, you know, we're able to learn from them and, you know, right our ship. But for to them that love the Lord, you know, all things can work together for good. So be thankful. So remember, when you make it through or as you're struggling through, pray to God. They had a long time on an ark. They had a lot of chores, I'm sure, to keep the ship shape together. But I expect they had the opportunity to spend, you know, a lot of that time in prayer. There might not have been as much, you know, sun shining, but, you know, because of all the raining. But, you know, they had a light that they could, you know, turn to in God. and be thankful that he continued to keep them safe in the ark. And then afterwards, you know, as soon as, you know, the skies cleared and the floodwaters receded, they go out onto the dry land. What did he do? He turned back. He built the altar and immediately worshiped God as we should. So, you know, the story of Jesus and the 10 lepers, Luke chapter 17, who do we want to be like? You know, we want to be that, you know, small minority that returns to thank Jesus. All right, lesson number two. God remains with us even though, you know, the seas are rough, even though we might not be able to see him. What can you, so we've got this sign, this rainbow, it's a sign of our covenant. When can you not see this rainbow? Okay, when there's no rain, there's no moisture in the air, what else is necessary for a rain? Sunlight. Okay, so almost half the time it's dark outside. It's very difficult to have this, you know, light shining through, you know, moisture, you know, splitting all the different colors if there's no light. But that doesn't mean God is not there. You know, if we can make it to that next day, we can give the light an opportunity to shine through the moisture, and, you know, we'll see the rainbow. And that reminds us that of this covenant, and that God is always with us. Flip over to Matthew chapter 28. Matthew 28, verse 20. Please, thank you.
Teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And lo,
right?
I am with you always, even to the end of the age.
Okay, so this is our familiar text that, you know, oftentimes we call the Great Commission. You know, we're all power is given to Jesus. We are to go out into all the world to teach, to baptize, to teach. And then what does he tell us? I am with you always. You know, I'm with you in the dark times of your life. I'm with you in the day times of your life. That's very comforting. John 16:33, another example. All right, in the last couple of minutes, our third lesson. Our worship should be a sweet savor unto God. It should be pleasing to God. What is necessary for those things to be possible? Okay, so our worship must be in spirit and in truth. How do we do that? Okay, our heart has to be right. Our attitude has to be right. You know, we shouldn't have the opinion, the thoughts that, oh, I have to go and worship, you know, today. We should want to go and worship today. Okay, so the portions of our worship service need to be by his directions. That are clearly spelled out, you know, through command or examples that we have of followers of Christ worshiping him. Flip over to Psalms 122, verses 1. This is an Old Testament verse, but the underlying tone, I think, is appropriate. Psalms 122, verse 1, and when you get there, somebody read that for us.
I was glad when they said to me, let us go into the house of the Lord.
So this is, you know, David speaking here. He was glad when he had the opportunity to go to the house of the Lord to worship God. And I think that's a good attitude for us to replicate, for us to have, you know, for the worship, which is so important for our time here on the earth, so we can continue to make sure that we're thankful to God for all of the blessings that He gives us. We've got a minute or two left. Is there any thoughts from the day? We've had several good lessons. Anything you didn't have an opportunity to say before, Ralph, and then Harry? Yes.
It says Abel also brought up the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. So fat was separate.
Right.
And then Hebrews 11:4. Well, first of all, in Genesis it's called his offering, and the Lord respected Abel and his offering.
Right. Right. Correct. Yeah. They didn't say, they might not have said the word altar here, you know, in our version, but he had to, you know, put it on somewhere, something. Good thoughts, Harry?
I was impressed with chapter 8, verse 22 of Genesis. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, and day and night shall not cease. We're still on the earth.
Well, yeah, we're still on the earth. The earth is, you know, essentially our world, but the earth is temporary. It is a created, you know, thing. Then when God, you know, is done with it, when its time is past, you know, it will be no more. But until then, the promise holds through. Mr. Billy?
I've worked with the church in the Louisiana. I made the statement that God told Abel what and how to sacrifice. And you want to know how did I know that? I said, no. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. So if he did bow to faith, he heard God directly. He has been upset.
Thank you for your time. We appreciate it.